Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jared Fredericks on the show. Jared's from Northeast South Dakota. We've had him on before. He's a guide and tournament angler. You can find him on Facebook at South Dakota Fishing Guide. That being said, Jared is on the show, and we're talking about slip bobbering. This time of year, a lot of that stuff is going on. A lot of people are catching fish on a lot of different things, and slip bobbers are definitely in. And this is probably one of the most in-depth conversations in general on the slip bobber. And we definitely in this interview with Jared Fredericks explore some ideas for a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different bodies of water, just a lot of different conditions, a lot of different, you know, slip bobbering situations, if you will. And just really, really fun. Definitely got my gears turning a lot after this conversation. So I really, really do appreciate Jared coming on and sharing so much of his perspective on something that he has a ton of experience with. And he's done it all over on different bodies of water, tournament fishing, as well as a fishing guide day to day. So yeah, a lot of great stuff in this on a very, very popular topic at slip bobbering for walleyes. Let's get into it with Jared Fredericks. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglacialakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already planned your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglacialakes.com. You're going to find the lodging opportunities. You're going to see maps of the area. You click on the fishing tab, and it's going to showcase some of the great fishing opportunities in that area. From there, you can look up the local guide services or the bait shops. That's where you're going to find the real-time fishing reports that you need when you're looking ahead and planning on one of these trips. So again, if you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglacialakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook. Awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. What have you been up to lately, man? Have you been staying busy fishing? What's going on?
Well, I basically fish every day, it seems like. It's just whether I'm at tournaments or pre-fishing for clients or guiding, really. So this year we kind of had a second baby here a few months ago, so I kind of toned it down on the tournament side of things for just this year so I can get caught up with life, it seems like. And now I feel like you never get caught up with life, so you just make excuse not to. And
yeah.
So I'm just taking a year off, and then I'm still fishing some MWTs, toying with the idea of flirting with Skokwee NWT and just fishing some local tournaments, trying to stay closer to home so that way baby mama has me to reach out to if there's an issue at home so I can be close to home. So it's kind of convenient for now. But, you know, for the most part, just fishing every day, trying new techniques every day, playing with my forward-facing sonar, trying to hone in on it, you know, trying to find new techniques to how to relate that to guide fish, how to relate it to tournaments, how to be better, you know, angler every day.
Anything cool going on this year for you as far as the spring? It seemed like everywhere was an early ice out. You know, you guys, the season doesn't necessarily close out there. So tell me a little bit about what you've been seeing out there this spring.
I can tell you one thing. We've been seeing rain. So with rain, rain equals runoff, which means current. And these walleyes seem like anytime I see rain and runoff, springtime, it gets me so excited because walleyes are naturally want to funnel to a current side of things. And it seems like when I fish in the springtime, I'm always fishing the north side of lakes because walleyes are naturally trying to hone in on anywhere there might be current. So I haven't seen current. I haven't seen rain. It seems like in forever. So I'm like trying to change my mindset this spring of how I've been fishing the last 3 years for these walleyes to like, hey, we've got current, man. We need to look for current seams. We need to look for different things that's going to draw these walleyes in, and we're going to catch more fish. And that's kind of what we've been doing is trying to find current. And I tell you what, a slip bobber in current, oh, it's nothing better.
We've had some really warm days this spring, but we've also seen our fair share of cold fronts in the Midwest. I mean, and with a little bit of runoff, does it muddy the water up? What are some of those things, if at all, gives you a little bit of a hiccup in these conditions?
Well, cold fronts really do seem to matter. And then a big rainfall seems to matter. It dropped the water temps of us. I was fishing, you know, this time of year, I try to hone in on those lakes that are 4 to 8 foot of water. That's strictly just bowls out here. And I know North, that's the same thing too, basically a prairie pothole. And I like to use those as like my breeding ground for the springtime bites and just try to capitalize on those bites as much as I can. But I can tell you this much, if you have 2 inches of rain and the water temp goes from 64 to 59, they do shut off. And that's where you can try pulling live bait and stuff. Or if the water goes from murky to muddy, you might as just pack up and leave. I found out that the hard way. I just need to remember that with runoff, fast amount of runoff, especially in the Dakotas, we have so much tiling that when we have a lot of rain, it just pours into these lakes, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Bad thing is that it dirties the water so darn bad that you could catch fish. It's much harder. So then after those kind of conditions, I just go to deeper, clearer water lakes and fish those fish. And then I come back to after we have somewhat of a calm couple days and some consistent weather. It seems like those shallow lakes will fire again, but those shallow lakes around here, they only fire till about mid-June, late June, and then they're pretty much done until the fall. So I try to capitalize on those bites as much as I can, but man, they're so affected. We haven't seen 2 inches of rain in I think probably 4 years. So I kind of, I had to forget to remind myself what happens when you have 2 inches of rain. It's a good thing. It's a bad thing. So that's kind of what, again, I think everyone's realizing is that we haven't seen this much rain. I mean, I think we've got 15 inches of rain since March. So that's quite a bit of rain
right now, or maybe just like, what you've been up to kind of lately is what I'm really interested in. Well, talking about the conditions that we've been having, some of the things that you got going on. What's the deal, man? What are the most interesting things you got going on right now? What are you doing to catch fish? What are some of the conditions? What are the patterns? What are the spots you're on? I want to hear about all of it, man. So I'll start wherever you want to start, man. But what's been going on lately? How you been catching your fish?
Well, lately we've been toying with the idea. I mean, it's the leeches are just finally our local dealer got in some big leeches. And so we finally got those jumbos ones we really like. And so we've been playing with those. And I don't care how old are you, if you're 2 or 90, if you don't like seeing a bobber go down, your mindset in fishing is probably,
It ain't for you.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I've fished so many tournaments in my lifetime and I don't care if I'm in a tournament or not. When I see that bobber go down, I'm just like, the heart just starts racing. So the second I seen those big jumbo leeches, I kind of put away a lot of the trolling rods. I still have a casting rod in the boat, so I like to, simultaneously do both. But the way I slip bobber fish is a little different. I like to have the rods basically constantly moving. So if I have wind, I like to watch them swing over rock piles, swing across weed flats. So generally speaking, when I start slip bobbering this time of year, which I'm starting now, is it's all hands on deck, and we ride around as many slip bobbers as we can. So that's what we've been doing, is slip bobbering. And basically just finding areas where we can wind blown areas that we can keep our slip bobbers moving. I don't like slip bobbers sitting in one spot. So generally speaking, when we're going to slip bobber, we got 90% slip bobbers in the boat.
When do you start thinking slip bobbering in the spring? Like, is it a water temperature deal? Are you looking for key, you know, sort of, you know, the fish to be kind of set up in a certain way on certain spots? Like what is it in your mind that you're paying attention to when you know, like, all right, man, tomorrow I'm going to bust out the bobber rods for the first time, you know, of the season, man? Like, tell me a little bit of that story for yourself.
Well, really, for me, I think when I have a slow day, when I have like water temps drop or I have the conditions change, I know it's going to be a slow day. A walleye can't resist a bobber and some kind of bait, more than likely a leech. And the reason I say that too is like these fish are post-spawn fish. So now the water temps are pushing 60. So we all know once you get above 60, they start getting real aggressive, right? And for the most part, you can catch them casting. That's what 90% of the guys do out here. For me, it seems like I can catch more fish slip bobbers because I can present them to their face, whether they're wanting to feed or not, whether it's a cold front or some kind of change that most guys would just leave that lake. I think I can still get them to bite. And I always tell people the reason why a bobber is so impressive and so effective is that, let's say we're at Thanksgiving dinner and we just all ate a big meal and we're sitting there watching the Cowboys beat the Vikings, by the way. and we're seeing that we're all bloated. We've eaten so much, you know, and then mom says, hey, you know, do you guys want dessert? And you're like, yeah. She's like, come get it. I'm like, how about I bring it to you? All right. Well, she puts it in your face. Now you're like, all right. And all of a sudden I have room for dessert. Same thing with walleyes and a leech and a crawler or a minnow. You present it in their face long enough, they're just natural predators. They just want to feed or just kill things for that matter. And they're going to hit it. And so I just feel like you can be more effective on days where it's the conditions aren't right. Even on dead calm days when the fish are just like they've never, you know, in South Dakota and Dakotas, they don't know what no wind is. So they're kind of confused. They still will hit a leech and, you know, a leech or a crawler or a minnow. I mean, that presenting that live bait in the right way, in the right depth, right in front of their face, they're going to strike it 9 times out of 10. And you're going to hook up more. The issue is you got to get those baits at the right depth. And that's where the forward facing sonar is being so effective, is making sure your bait is right presenting in their face at the right time, every time. That's where I think is key these days, is with the new technology we have. And so I literally have bobbers in my boat 90% of the time. So I know a lot of guys want to say, yeah, when's the right time to do it? I think it's always the right time. There's never a wrong time. NWT tournaments, which I fished numerous, has proven that time and time again. They go to lakes where we don't think the bobber is going to win, and their guys are bobbing. I was just left Lake Erie, and guys were, I've never seen more slip bobbers in a boat on lake. I've never seen slip bobbers in a boat up until this year in Lake Erie. We're fishing a tournament with 300 boats, and I went and I seen bobbers. I'm like, these guys, obviously, if they didn't realize, NWT was just here. Joe Okada just promoted that he was slip bobbering out there. And I don't think I've ever seen a tournament where there's slip bobbers in Erie. And I bet I've seen 150 boats slip bobbers.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
We're definitely going to get into setup. I have a ton of questions for your setup and some of your opinions on that. But I'm still thinking like locations. It's a versatile presentation. It's really a versatile way to present a bait to a walleye, versatile in how it can be used and when it can be used. You're already talking about, you know, using it on rocks this time of year, emerging weeds this time of year. I kind of want to still break that down a little bit, and some of the spots, the locations, how you set up with boat control. You know, you're talking about utilizing a crosswind to blow things, you know, keep it moving properly. I kind of want to still hear a little bit more on that side of things, like the type of spots this time of year you're finding walleyes on, sort of the variety of spots that you're finding walleyes on the lakes around you, and then just how you sort of utilize the presentation of slip bobbering, you know, to just maximize your fishing experience, man. Keep going on that.
So, for example, like a lake that's gen clear, we have some lakes out here that are starting to get zebra mussels and starting to develop to the Minnesota side of things where we're finding real clear water. Generally, when I'm this time of year, we normally have abnormally new clear water because we don't have the weeds. We just don't have the stirrup and stuff like that. Of course, we have extremely dirty lakes. So we have one extreme to the other. So when I find an extremely clear lake and I have a little bit of wind blowing, but I have a little bit, let's say I lose sight of bottom at like 8 feet. So generally what I'll do is I'll drive around, I'll look for that 8 foot to 12 foot, and I'll find either some structure of weeds or structure of rocks, or perfect where weeds and rocks mix. It seems like those walleyes after post-spawn, they're still shallow, but when it's a clear day, they seem to drop out just to where they barely can, you know, visibility is a little more darker and they're able to ambush their predators. That's where I find it a key. And then when I find, let's say, a rock and weed mix that are, you know, just emerging weeds and rocks, what I'll do is I'll just set my slip bobber to the appropriate depth to float right across it. And then I'll find a side wherever the wind's blowing. I'll try to find a rock pile that I can try to get my bobbers to slide down it instead of over it, because over it works, but then you have to, you can only, if the rock pile is at 8 foot to 4 foot, then you have to set your slip bobbers at 4 foot to slide over across it, and you're not as effective. So I try to find a wind that I can blow parallel with it and let those slip bobbers be in the strike zone much, much longer. And basically what I do is I'll pitch them behind the boat, open the bail, let them slide across it, and then I'll just take the next one that's farther out, reel it in, do the same thing, it just kind of like a train effect, you know, just running things across their face enough until one of them hits it. And it seems like those spots kind of reload too. If you have enough wind, you can pull quite a bit of fish off those spots and you can continually catch fish, because it's not like there's a pile of fish on right away, but it seems like those fish are running up and down those shorelines that time of year with the wind. They always seem to stop there and hold to those areas just a little bit longer. And if you constantly got slip bobbers across them, you're going to get bit. As long as you're in the right strike zone,
where you're at, like guiding, I want to speak to the guiding half of your brain down there in South Dakota. What do you find to be some of the details that are probably the most impactful when it comes to like the setup, and then obviously why you kind of have your own particular setup?
So for me, I have a little different setup that I kind of stumbled across years ago when I was finding out these expensive rods people give their clients, no offense, but I used to give a client a $200 rod, and I found that $200 rods break just as easy as a $50 rod. So you break three of those in a day, you start second, you're guessing what you're going to give these people for fishing. Well, one day I ran across these rods called Ugly Sticks, right? And believe it or not, they turned out to be one of the best investments I ever did, and they have just whatever I want for fishing, and I use them in tournaments now, is that I use a 7 foot medium heavy, believe it or not, ugly stick. And the reason it's really flimsy, so it has that ability to set the hook, because I know a lot of guys like using 8'6" and 9'6" rods, and I just hate storing those things. I just don't really like that length, because when I'm going to set the hook, I don't know. It just never really got with me. So then I got away with getting away from mono, and I went to braid, and with that flimsy ugly stick, it seems like I can get the hook sets, but I have enough forgiveness in that rod to be able to keep those big walleyes pinned. And now when I lose a big walleye, I second guess myself with braid. But for now, when you're casting braid too, with my setup that I have with the ugly stick has the big, big eyelets, right? So what that means is when I cast that slip knot out, I don't get caught on it all the time. And that's what I hate with these long 8'6", 9'6" rods. Well, they have so many eyelets on them that once they get down to that very, very end of it, if you're slip bobbering when it's still cold out, like, you know, I mean, below freezing, your eyelets are freezing. And I hate that. So I just love the big, big eyelets and letting that slip knot slide all the way through that rod. And so it doesn't mess with my cast, because nothing, no one hates more than You got the perfect leech, perfect setup. You go to cast and it catches, that thing's come back at your face, or that big leech, the last leech of the day, is gone because you cast it right off.
The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there, with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. For information on this area and the fishing opportunities here, head to sdglacialakes.com. You'll see the link is in the description of this podcast. On there, you're going to find all the resources that you need to research. Or if you feel like you're already familiar with the fishing opportunities there and you already plan your annual trip, if you're not checking out this website and the information on it, then you're leaving some on the table. Head to sdglacialakes.com. You're going to find the lodging opportunities. You're going to see maps of the area. You click on the fishing tab. It's going to showcase some of the great fishing opportunities in that area. From there, you can look up the local guide services or the bait shops. That's where you're going to find the real-time fishing reports that you need when you're looking ahead and planning on one of these trips. So again, if you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglacialakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rigged spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must-have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. But I feel like you definitely kind of package that up really well with your rod selection. It plays into how you like to, fight fish, as well as, you know, the casting, you know, practicality of it. But it also influences the rest of your setup with the different line choice, like mono versus braid, right? Like some people it's just braid or nothing. But then it's like, what size of braid? Because smaller braid can cast farther and maybe more accurately. But then it's so thin and slippery that your slip bobber knot doesn't stick to it. So then I know guys like Jason, you know, he'll run like a 14 or, 18 pound braid, because those slip bobber knots stick better to it, right? But those are discussions that I love, man. So then talk a little bit about some of your line choice and just some of those things, because again, this is an evolving thing. I can't imagine that the way you did this 10 years ago is the same as you did now, especially with like forward sonar. We're learning all those things, and then, you know, accurate casting comes a play. So, you know, the rest of your setup, man, what are your feelings there?
So the braid and mono is a debate we could go on for years. And I didn't even think mono was a thing anymore until I actually Devil's Lake, mind you, this is where it started. I was sitting there and I was just short of the final cut for day three for the championship. And lo and behold, the guy next to me was Hoyer, who's leading it. I went over there to kind of help him to see if he needed help with his boat, because I didn't make day three. I was in like, I think I got 12th place. I had the biggest bag of the tournament, but I stumbled day one, so it really hurt me. So I went over there, and he's got all these rods rigged up with mono. I'm like, man, mono's a thing of the past. And, you know, and I just was like, because like, it's all about braid. It's all about braid, you know. And he kind of made me think about it twice, like, maybe it is more about mono. I mean, because mono is more forgiving when you set the hook wrong. And or especially when you have a big fish, they kind of tend to stretch that line, just like how I go back to jig wrap and I use all mono. But the problem I don't go with mono is when I have clients in the boat, I do braid, because that slip knot, if you have mono and you have it too tight with mono, it seems like you can't move it without breaking that line. With braid, you can still move it no matter what, seems like, but you're not having to, you know, once that slip knot is like cinched into mono, it seems like you can never get it out. Because I've always super tightened it, and it's pretty much a done deal. So I kind of, for guiding wise and for everyday fishing, I stick to braid because it's easier to cast too. Now, mind you, mono seems to float better in the water when you're trying to do floats. It seems like it slows it down and presents the bait better in the water, actually, which most people don't think about, how braid sinks and mono just sits on top of it. And when you use a high vis mono, you can see that line and how it reacts. You can actually see that line getting pulled tighter, faster without the bobber moving. So if that fish grabs it and swimming with it, and you're like, is that the wind or is that a fish? you can see that in that line on mono, like instantly when a fish hits it, just how it pulls that line straighter faster versus braid. Braid moves so much in the water, you can't determine that really, right? So for me, with guiding and everyday fishing, I use braid just because it seems to be more practical and you can really set the hook and not break the line either. But we do lose a few more fish with braid. But how I set up is I do a braid. I do the general knot. You know, you can buy those pre-mixed knots. Lindy, everyone makes them out with a bead. Then I have a bobber. And bobbers I've played with numerous times. Still makes this one that's called the wobble bobber. I'm still not sure if I'm set on that one. So generally I use as a weighted bobber that has a keel weight kind of to it to the bottom with a rubber stopper in it. It makes that bobber go vertical every time you cast it. Then I go down to a bead again, and then I use an oversized swivel because I don't want that bead messing with that knot, and I tie a knot. Then I go to a fluorocarbon leader of anywhere between, it depends if I'm fishing rocks that have zebra mussels, I do like a 12 to 15 pound test because I know it's going to be real abrasive on those rocks. If I'm in an area there's no zebra mussels, I go to 8 to 10 with a fluorocarbon leader. This is where my different part. The bottom is always tungsten. I always use tungsten. It doesn't matter if it's Northland or Clam. They both have good ones. I just go wherever Shields has the cheapest deal.
Sure.
Seems like you go to Shields one day, they'll have Northland, you know, three of them for $6, and then they'll have Clam on sale. So I just buy them when they're on sale. And it seems like if you have tungsten, when that tungsten hits rocks, I catch way more fish. It literally has that sound that they want. But also, when I go to cast and that goes right in the water, the biggest thing I think tungsten is when you're in a wavy situation, when that bobber lifts up, that tungsten shoots farther down, faster down into that strike zone, and it seems like I get bit more when I have tungsten versus lead. And I don't really care about color. It's just, it's about how that bait gets back down in their face after a wave. So I'm strictly a firm believer in tungsten on the bottom there. And like an eighth or a 16th ounce.
You're talking about slip bobbers and like triggering bites. You know, this is where I think it gets fun. This is where I think the details that people are thinking about gets really, really fun, because I think for a more casual amateur angler like myself for so long, you know, just observing the slip bobber and deal and maybe, you know, dabbling in it. You know, I work with Jason, so like I'm kind of, you know, I'm seeing what he does and whatever, and I'm kind of adopting it best I can. But I, you know, especially I think like this is where like your tournament half of your brain kicks in, and I just love, you know, extracting as much of that as I can. But you're talking about slip bobber and triggering bites and manipulating your setup for, you know, I think so many of us just think slip bobbers are just hanging in front of their face and they just got to decide whether or not they're going to eat it. But like, you know, and the other thing too is like, oh, slip bobber, you got to have a bobber till you be off the bottom. And you're talking about making bottom contact with rocks. Like, dude, I just want to hear as many stories about that as I can, because I think that's where some real, real learning could come from. I think there's probably a lot of people that leave a lot on the table with their, you know, maybe it's not necessarily entirely their setup, but just the perspective that like, you know, oh, fall rates matter. You know, with the slip bobber setup, like making bottom contact matters with a slip bobber setup. I mean, this is definitely, I think we should spend as much time on this as you're willing.
You know, fall rates seem to have effect. I don't, you know, generally speaking, most guys would be using a plain hook kind of deal and then a split shot. I got away from that when I started noticing when I got a big fish on and I would break, not at the knot, but it would break where that split shot was. I'm a firm believer if you put a split shot on a mono or any kind of line that's not braid, it puts a nick in it, right? And anytime you have a nick in the line, that's the weak point of the line. So when you go to set the hook on a big fish, you always want to make sure you have a perfect knot. And I always test all my knots when I make them. And then when I catch a few fish, I always test that mono and braid knot just to make sure I don't have a weak spot. Because, I mean, generally speaking, slip bobber this time of year is going to catch the biggest fish. And the last thing you want is excuse why you lost that fish, whether in tournament or just fun fishing. So I got away from that split shot whole thing altogether. If I was to do a weight, I would do an egg weight, slip it up and down on my braid, and I'd have a bead above and a bead below it. That way it doesn't hit my knot, it doesn't hit my swivel. So I'd never, ever do a split shot.
But the reason I got away from the plain hook too, even though it makes that leech more natural, it seems like that leech is able to crawl up the hook better. When you have a plain hook, that leech will just crawl up that line and never come down versus like a tungsten weight. I'm a firm believer that they like try to crawl up the line, but it weighs them down so much that they get exhausted and they just go naturally float into that water again. To me, that's what I make sense to me. That's how I've been doing it for years. And it seems to be very effective for me because when I fish a lot of the tournaments like Winnebago, I'm normally the top 25% of guys, and we're all slip bobbering. So it tells me that if I'm beating other pros slip bobbering, that I must have a technique that's a little better than a lot of them. So to me, it tells me that it works and it's effective. But also I think is when that, like I said, that tungsten, it's been proven it falls faster than lead does. And we all know that there's something about that tungsten hitting rocks. So if you're fishing right above rocks and you got these giant waves coming, you're trying to slip bobber in a windy day, and that the slip bobber's coming up and then hitting a rock and then coming back down, and that ding sound, whatever it is, you know, that triggers the walleyes like a dinner bell. It seems like with that tungsten, it hits those rocks. Because I know it's hitting rocks to come back and my paint's all worn off, but it seems like when that bobber goes up and then it comes down, it's always sometimes I'm like, is it stuck in a rock or did I get a bite? So I reel down real slow. If I feel any kind of resistance, I always just set the hook. And it seems like a lot of times that's a walleye. So I firm believer that, you know, that drop rate in their face is going to be another way. Like, I mean, we've all casted a jig and a crawler or a minnow or leech. And as soon as it hits bottom, you go to set the hook, it's right there. It's like you make that perfect cast right in his face, and he's just going to naturally want to hit it, right? I feel like that's how that is with that motion of that slip bobber. Now, the thing, too, about it is where it's going to get muddy is that this forward-facing sonar, there's a lot of guys like Max Wilson and a few other guys are proving the fact that Joe Okada I'm leaving someone else out that did really good at NWT last year was Dustin Minky. They were all using forward-facing sonar and throwing these slip bobbers at these walleye's faces. Now, what I did learn at Erie was about forward-facing sonar is when you throw a bait right at their face, if you don't get it right on their nose and you hit their tail, they spook. So if these fish are really spooky, that's where the tungsten may not be so effective because you'll spook them. Maybe that time where you have an egg weight and just a plain hook where it slows right in their face and you can drag it across their face, that might be more effective. But that's where when guys start using forward facing sonar and slip bobbers in these tournaments and just fun fishing, I think you're going to see that there's going to be different instances where your normal slip bobbering technique you're used to is not going to work. It's not going to be effective. So you're going to have to change things up. And that's where I've been really starting to play with lately is trying to figure out what do these walleyes want, what time of year, how aggressive can I get these fish to come up to the bobber? Do I have to go below them? I'm spending a lot of time looking at this sonar, trying to distinguish which way these fish are sitting. So which way is their face? Cause if you throw it at their tail, they're spook instantly. No, it doesn't matter what it is. You got to figure out which way is their face facing. And right now our sonars are great, but they don't show which one the face unless it's a 30-pound carp. Other than that, yeah, you know, yeah, it's 18 to 22-inch walleye, you're not going to see the tail so much. So you got to determine, all right, which one's which, and you got to take a really good guess. So a lot of times guys will cast in front of them and let it swim by them. Then they're not so spooked. But if you want instant bite, you got to pick which way. When I was on Lake Erie, I was like, all right, I think this is swimming with us, so let's cast in front of him. Nope, that was at his tail. He's gone.
Do you feel like that's where like that mono and braid kind of conversation really meets in the middle is like with fall rates and just like how that bait ultimately presents to the fish, like on that initial fall where like it comes down a little bit slower. Like, do you feel like maybe that's part of it? Because I don't know, I'm just like envisioning this and all the things that I've done. I haven't really thrown a whole lot of mono on bobber rods, but I can certainly see, or, you know, I mean, it's like, I'm all ears for, you know, what people are thinking, but, you know, definitely like that's gotta be something to do with. And like you said, you know, that pendulum swing where if all your weight is on your jig, that's bringing that bait down, versus if it's floating down and you've got that sinker up above that swivel and then it kind of has like a pendulum once that leader meets the weight and swings around, like all those little differences, man. I just, like you said, forward sonar is just teaching us that a lot of this stuff kind of matters in situations.
So there's a guy that I really wish we could have on the phone call right now that he's no longer with us anymore, but I heard rumors. I know he's one of the best slip bobbers in the world, Pete Harsh.
Yeah, man.
And I was told that this is a rumor, right? And I wish I could. I mean, I've heard it from a few different guys because he was like a slip bobber legend the way he is. But what he did with one thing about slip bobbers is supposedly there's a guy that fished within a tournament, made him take his shoes off because he thought the fish would spook when he had shoes on in the boat. So he fished barefooted. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I was like, I really would like to pick that guy's brain because he caught a lot of fish, slip bobbers.
A lot of big fish. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so that's where, you know, the reason I brought it up was, is about noise and reaction to fish and how they react to things. And, you know, it's like, it seems like in the springtime, they don't want that noise. They don't want something to spook them. They're on edge, right? Versus when the water temp's 70, they're ready to kill anything that comes by their face. So I think it's all about time of the year and how you present your baits. But with the mono and the drop rate, I think it all depends on how deep it is. Because like at Erie, we're fishing water, like you want as fast as you can to get down there. So I would, you know, I would not do. I would like a 5-pound braid just to get down as fast as I could, because you have waves crashing beside you. This fish is swimming 3 miles an hour, and you're just trying to keep up with it. So, but like in a shallow lake or like a flat, like at Devil's Lake, we're in 5 foot of water, and that thing, you know, when you throw a braid, it's instantly at the bottom there. Maybe a mono would be a better option. Maybe a 10-pound mono where it has a more bigger diameter, and you're throwing like a 16-ounce jig head with a bobber on it. That might be more effective, you know, than actually throwing braid then. I think all those things are come to play situation by situation, you know, on how you present that bait. And also the time of year. Like I said, the time of year is these fish, you know, post-spawn, it's like they got punched in the gut. They're just really exhausted. They're not chasing their fish. And they're like on edge, you know. It's like they're on like a 30-day no sleep kind of thing, and they're just edgy. So you got to present the bait slower to them and methodical versus in the summertime, it seems like they slept all winter because they wouldn't bite, and all of a sudden now 70 degrees hits and they're just destroying baits that are 30 feet from them. You know, it seems like you can start trolling and stay off the bottom 5 feet and they'll race up to it, you know. Same thing with slip bobbers. It's you could slip bobber year round. There's no reason you should ever put your slip bobbers away. It's just how you present these baits. With forward facing sonar, we're learning every day how these fish react to it, you know. How do they want, do they, you know, the speed too, am I reeling too fast when I drag it by the face? Do I need to let the natural current go through? You know, it's heck, musky guys slip bobber, you know. I mean, that was the coolest thing I ever did. I was in Wisconsin one day and I seen this guy with this giant bobber. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm musky fishing with a bobber. And he had like a 22-inch sucker on that thing hooked up. I mean, that was insane. I fished by that guy for 2 hours extra just so I could see that bobber go down. I never did, but I was like, I can't wait to see this bobber go down. I mean,
how are you
racing when a 22-inch sucker has something pulling down? So, and he was slipping down the current basically is what he was doing. And I was like, this is the coolest thing in the world. Like, I just want to see this bobber go down.
You know, slip bobbering has ultimately, you know, with respect, you know, slip bobbering for so many years was just depth control. It was really just, you know, a lot of rudimentary, you know, setups, and it didn't have to get sophisticated whatsoever. And, you know, forward sonar is helping us push that boundary. But just listening to you sort of just out loud process, you know, like when asking you about like mono and braid and fall rates, like just listening to you sort of like out loud process that just has my gears turning so much. Like just, you know, that's the type of thinking like in the boat. And you're right, slip bobbering is definitely in right now, where it's like any day of the year that you can be slip bobbering, it's happening, it's out there. But definitely if you're the type of angler that wants to learn, for whatever reason, whether you do fish derbies or you don't, or, you know, if you're just the type of angler that wants to push yourself and learn and maximize every time you're out there, And slip bobbering is a part of your game. If you slip bobber all year round and you just utilize it in all the different situations that you're in, if you're not thinking about, you know, those types of tweaks throughout the year, if your setup stays the exact same from day one till the end, you're probably leaving some things on the table. I think that's true. I mean, unless it's the same spot and you're, you know, throwing at the same cabbage bed all year long. But even then, you know, like the depth of your bait, and like you said, like fall rates, as the season changes, these fish react differently to different baits. And that's an opportunity for you to tweak your setup and try to get two more big bites in a day, or two more big bites in a weekend, and they could be your two biggest bites if you're just thinking this way. And I think that's so true, man. And, you know, guys like you, you kind of do it, you know, easily. You just, you've experienced so much that, you know, you make a lot of that thought process seem simple, and I love it. But it's not so simple for some of us. Some of us, it's kind of outside our comfort zone to think, oh my gosh, like, could I really be considering, like, you know, like shallow spring, maybe just grabbing one of my mono rods and throwing it into a slip bobber setup and just see what happens or see how they react, especially if you have that forward sonar where you can validate some of those theories. Like, that's the type of fun thinking and sort of those fun conversations. That's where I just feel like I take a lot away from it. But it's also, I don't know, man, that's the juice, man. That just gets me juiced up to get out there and just try to get better and try to better my own setup, man. I just love it, man. So I just appreciate that. What else are we leaving out for this slip bobber conversation for right now, this time of year?
I think it bases on what state you're on too. I mean, so like when you're in Minnesota, I just thought about that, is you only get one rod. So like in South Dakota, when I'm slip bobbering, my ADD is kicking, like I should be casting, you know, in this net. With Minnesota, you have one option, you know, it's one rod. So I feel like it's really based on your options for the day too, right? I mean, I feel like in the Dakotas, we're so spoiled with two rods, and in Wisconsin, it's three.
Yeah.
We can just experiment every day with different techniques all the time and be able to do everything. But Minnesota, you know, they're the ones that are really restricted on one rod per deal. So for them, when they slip bobber, they better be honed in, you know, because you don't have the ability to, if you're out by yourself, trying different depths, trying different things, like you have one rod. Like it's just, I still can't.
No, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. So then that's where, you know, every other aspect of your game really comes into play, you know, like really interpreting your electronics, not driving over fish, you know, like just being like the ultimate in stealth. No, I agree. I think there's a lot to it, but definitely if you're trying to level up your walleye game and you don't have confidence in slip bobbering, it should definitely be like on the list of priorities, like, you know, like gaining confidence in slip bobbering, because just pay attention to target walleye, watch YouTube throughout the year. You know, the guys, you know, the content guys, you know, like, you know, Jason, we could literally probably film a slip bobber episode every single day of the open water season. We obviously don't, because you got to have a little variety pack, you know, when you're doing that. But like Tom Boley, it's like, you know, it's like same thing. You know, these guys that are really proving everywhere in the Midwest, whether you're fishing and like you said, now all of a sudden it's spilling over into the Great Lakes. Now, all of a sudden, it's happening on the biggest stage of tournament angling on the Great Lakes, like Lake Erie. It's like, man, this is, you know, people might have thought that, you know, like slip bobbering kind of hit its peak there 5-6 years ago when forward sonar started to, you know, bring it back, you know, make it cool again. But I feel like it's still just on the rise. These conversations are just endless. So to sign this out, and unless something else pops into your head, man, we can sign this out. The timing of this is perfect. We can do this again if we have to sometime this summer. But I just want to sign it off with you, man, and promote yourself, your business, how people can get a hold of you if they have questions, or maybe they, you know, want to look you up for a guide trip, anything like that, man. We can sign it off if you're ready.
Yeah, I mean, one other thing I was going to say is don't be sleeping on slip bobbers and creek jumps. That's the last thing I'd say is.
Ooh, you're getting, oh gosh, you're going down a dangerous path there. That's another two-hour conversation.
That's a rabbit hole for another day.
Oh, yeah, dude.
We can leave it at that so guys can ponder on that some more. Slip bobbers and creek jumps, there's nothing better.
I could probably edit that out, man, for you saying that, man. That's just like saying cuss words in church around here, dude. You're talking about secrets, man. You're talking Pandora's box right there.
Oh, we opened it.
Oh, dang, dude. That's awesome. All right. Yeah, dude. I appreciate that. Well, how can people look you up and, you know, your guide service and all that stuff, man? And yeah, dude, we'll let it go that way.
Yep. You can look me up at SouthDakotaGuidedFishing.com as my website, and South Dakota Fishing Guide is our Facebook site, and we kind of post whenever we can about bites that we find or how the bites are going and stuff like that. We kind of slacking lately because of tournaments, but yeah, if you guys got any questions, just want to even do a trip with us. We do open water, we do ice fishing and snow bears. We do our license in actually North Dakota now too, so we're flirting a little bit in North Dakota, but mostly South Dakota for now. My number is 605-201-729 also.
There it is, dude. I appreciate the time, Jared. This is clutch. It's perfect. I think it's a great time of year to be promoting your area too, and all the fishing going on down there. We're obviously big supporters of that. We love that. We love our visits to South Dakota, specifically there. And man, I always appreciate it. Again, I love the candid, you know, fishing talk. It just, I mean, everybody's gears are going to be turning after that, and mine included. So the next good bite I get on a slip bobber, I'll be sending you a picture of it, brother.
Sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Later, man.
Take care. Bye.